Well, if this all falls apart, we can start a band, obviously.
Yep.
So that's our...
Yeah, we've got all of our instruments.
I've already got the perfect name. Butterscotch Shenanigans.
There you go. There it is. It's a good band name. Yep. We've already got the shirts, too.
Butterscotch Shenanigans.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 211 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast, Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm very sleepy.
I'm Sam, and I'm quite sore.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is June Seblin, 2019.
Double Seblin, one of my favorite days.
favorite. Before we get started, we have a warning. Anything can happen on this show. Babies, leave.
Yeah. Babies are fine. Kids are fine. Adults,
get out of here. There's going to be profanity, so scoot. Mm-hmm. And by that, we mean get yourself a Razor scooter. They're very convenient.
Very fun.
And, they are, although they do not have any shock absorption to speak of.
No.
Or speakers, which is a
or AC.
Or AC.
You know?
Really, scooters are garbage, now that I think about it.
And they don't have a windscreen, you know?
That's true.
Because, like,
we're bugs at exactly, hit 7 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Why you wear a motorcycle helmet when you scoot, you noob.
Yeah, you gotta be protected. Are you just out there scooting without a helmet on?
I have been. I never wear my leathers or anything.
Man, you need an extra layer of skin in case you, you know, hit a crack.
That's what I do. Just calluses,
sprawling.
Head to toe. I just every day I get up and I give myself a real firm rub down to really like get that skin roughened up.
Mm-hmm.
No lotion.
What do you use to do? Because if you use sandpaper, you would just be smoother afterwards.
It's true.
So what do you use to increase your calluses?
So the way it works, like if you're lifting weights, you get calluses on your hands, right?
Because of how grippy things
because
are.
So you basically need to figure out how to grip things with your face, your cheeks, with your forehead. Pretty soon, boom, head to toe, you're like a rhinoceros.
Everywhere.
You've got thick skin.
You'd be like the who's the guy from
How
Black
did we
Panther.
Get here?
The villain Black Panther, warmonger.
Oh yeah.
Killmonger, whatever.
He just poked
he's got like he's got like that callous
the
skin.
Scar things.
That's what you need.
So, one of the cool
but
things
are scars cuz scars are not calluses. Scars are actually weaker than regular skin.
Are they?
Yeah.
But they're thicker. If you do
they're
them right.
Thicker, but they're weaker though at the same time.
Eventually it bounces out. Now one of the cool tricks about what he did that nobody told him is you don't actually have to kill people to do one of those marks on yourself.
So you can just do it.
He thought that you had to kill somebody every time you did it. Which was good practice for him.
And to be fair, his name was Killmonger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. Now do you think he gave himself that name first?
Or did he live up to his name?
Or did somebody else give it? Was it like a high school nickname that somebody else gave to him?
I sometimes wonder about these, especially names that are that
It's
intense.
Very descriptive.
Yeah. It kind of has to come
I have
later.
To admit, when I heard that he was referred to as Killmonger, I kind of laughed because like –
it's a little too ridiculous.
What?
Nobody calls anybody that.
Yeah. He just loved killing. He just killed everybody.
The only other monger I know of is a fishmonger.
Yeah.
That's a person who sells fish.
It's a selling fish, right?
Yeah. So if you're a killmonger,
you sell death?
You're a mercenary.
That makes sense.
So he just goes down by the docks.
Sell sword.
Sells some kills.
Yeah, it doesn't work so well for that.
Oh, yeah. So it's the same idea as a sell sword.
Yeah.
It's just, but you're not selling your sword. You're mongering your kills. Mongering
well, you got to monger those kills. Also, we'd like to thank our recurring supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. Thank you very much for supporting whatever is happening right now. This is what happens. So we're recording this episode well in advance because Sam is going to Iceland right now.
Only 3 days since the last one we recorded.
I have a question. Is it far north enough that I can technically count it as visiting, you know, the Antarctic continent?
Antarctica is... real south.
Which one's the Arctic? Not
Antarctic is because it's the opposite of the Arctic.
Does it count then as visiting? Was it close enough that I could be like
– no, because here's the thing is the poles are getting further away because they're melting.
Isn't the magnetic thing also moving a little bit?
No, I think it's just like going – I think it's just wiggling.
It's wiggling.
I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's just a little
– so there's two ways that you can cheat and go to the North Pole without actually going there.
All right.
One,
hear me.
You can see an aurora borealis. That means you're far enough that it counts.
Because they have those up there.
Yeah, they've got those.
In the land of ice.
But you have to see one.
You got to see it.
I'm going to see if I can check this off my list.
The other is to just go outside shirtless for a while. Because once you're cold enough, that also counts.
Because it feels like it.
You're like, I get it.
Get the idea?
But it has to be cold for that to work.
It has to be cold. Right now, I think it's 300 degrees in Iceland because there's a real elaborate hoax going on. I don't know if you heard about this, where some people are trying to make everybody think that the world is getting really fucking hot.
And they're being really clever about it by making the world hot.
By making it actually happen. It's a very elaborate ploy.
It's quite the ruse.
It's been going on for decades now, and it's probably going to keep going on. I'm just really excited for when somebody finally reveals the cameras, and is like, gotcha!
And explains the joke, because it's very confusing.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the punchline is yet, but it's coming. I'm sure it's coming. Also, Shenana Jam is coming.
It'll really be fast.
Next weekend. Not this one.
Next weekend after this episode airs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Is the Shen.
Not the upcoming.
Don't do that. You can do that. Make us confusing as soon as you start trying
but
to
But it's
explain.
Not even the upcoming.
A week
one.
And a half
it's
after this after. Episode
yes,
airs.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Which is more specifically on June. No, July 12th.
12th to 14th.
July
and
12th.
It's going to be awesome. So we have people
also,
signing up.
By the way, that's spelled W-A.
It's going to bloover your smocks off.
It really is. So sign up at shenanigans.com. And again, this is a weekend of making games online. You can join people in the Discord or just do it yourself if you're more of a solo type, rogue.
You should still hang out in the Discord.
Yeah, hanging out's fun.
If you're some kind of code monger, art monger.
Yeah,
whatever you're mongering. Whatever mongering you got going on.
We're buying it.
Yeah. We'll not kill mongering though.
No. Yeah, don't. Yeah, no, none of that.
We're not buying hit people services.
Not currently.
Yeah.
I don't think,
yeah, the Shenanigans
I don't think that's
great.
In our wheelhouse. Unless we have to abandon games and go into military industrial complex.
To killmongering.
There's always money there, you know?
That's true.
Easy money and murder.
Easy money. So the Shenanigans was going to be fantastic. We, of course, will be participating, and the themes come from some of our podcast titles for those of you who are new to the jam. And basically what we do is we select three themes. You get to pick the one you want to use.
Are we going to do just one this year? Did three work out last
three
year?
Three worked really well, yeah. Okay. You pick the one you want to use, and then you just kind of go bang out a game in a couple of days. And if you haven't made a game before, shut up.
Now you will.
If you haven't made one, also shut up.
Also shut up and come make one anyway.
So
we've made tons and tons of jam games. You can see some of them on our itch page, which is bscotch.itch.io, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a ton of them up there.
There's also a Levelhead demo there now.
There is, yeah. So we put that up.
Play that while you're at
it. Go there for the demo,
mm-hmm.
Play that, and then be like, now I'm inspired. And then hang out there, sign up for the thingy. Although I don't think you can find the jam from the
– No, just go to shenanigans.com.
Yeah. If you want to dip your toes into our jam pool
– Yep.
I'd recommend
– Wiggle your digits.
I'd recommend Goop Legacy. That's a classic.
That's from last year, yeah.
Bedty the Yedty.
Mm-hmm.
That also, one also really good.
Also good. We've also got I Can't See Shit.
Yeah.
Great one. And
that could be the precursor to Levelhead.
Could be.
It's a blind platformer where you had to scream in order to see your surroundings.
Yes. Yep. Of course, Do You Even Lift, the elevator simulator.
Who classic. Play that one even has B-Sketch ID in it.
It does.
So it's got a... I guess it has achievements, probably.
So we're thinking challenge.
Yeah.
Our challenge
you can
last sync
your progress for some reason.
Yep.
With Goop Legacy was to see if we could integrate some B-Scotch ID stuff or Rumpus stuff into the game, which we did. It's no longer online.
Also the early Rumpus days, and we've changed everything.
Yes.
So
you used to be able to, in Goop Legacy, you would actually be able to basically mix your goops with someone else, and you would get an offspring goop.
I think that's probably broken now, but
it's totally broken.
Guaranteed broken.
So this year, I think we're going to try something else ludicrous like that. See if we make an MMO.
We're going to make an MMO.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm saying that's a joke.
But is it? Let's see what we can do.
I don't know what number you have to get to before it counts as massive, but that's the goal. So whatever.
We want to get all of
the numbers, the people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Massive.
Does that mean just... As long as we can support everybody who wants to play the game at the same time.
What we're going
to
do.
Because as long as then only like 12 people want to play it.
We're good to go.
Then we can
we're going to make an MMO where you play as a sphere. Okay.
Whoa.
And then you merge together with other players and you all have to decide which direction you're going to. You democratically roll your way across the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And you, of course, smash into other people's.
And you absorb
spheres.
Them.
Yeah.
So it's like Agario, except
democratic.
Nobody
it's
wins.
Democratic Agario.
Yeah. And on like a sort of a Mad Max sort of a hellscape.
Yeah, really it's like a metaphor for, you know, the costs of imperial you know, expansion, which is that as you roll and crush more of your people and bring them into the fold, now you know you're heavier, takes more votes to kind of
get it's harder to move. It's an allegory, you know. And of course, when you're rolling on your own, you can go anywhere you want. Yep. But you will be crushed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you know, actually, I kind of do want to make this. It would have to be in 3D though. Uh-huh. I guess we'll have to do that too.
Whatever.
Okay. Sounds fun. Yeah. So shenanajam.com. Go there. Do that. Sign up. Do it.
Cool.
The end.
Next.
Next bit of news. The Levelhead demo is chugging along on itch. It's creeping its way up the popular games list, which is cool. Still don't really know much about what's happening with it because it's only been a couple of days.
Yeah.
And we are going to send out the Ballyhoo to kind of blast that thing up the charts. Mm-hmm. So we'll have more to say about it. We may be considering a Steam demo, but we're doing some more research on that to see if that's...
Yeah, demos are weird. Turns out there's a lot of conflicting reports about what they're for and what they do and everything else.
And so, who plays them and who doesn't play them. And
the main worry about them is just that people will basically...
get their fill.
Get that instead of the game.
Yeah.
And more specifically, people who would have bought your game had there not been a demo... Now, because there is a demo, won't for some reason, whether it's because they now played it enough or they actually hate it. Mm-hmm.
In which case, you don't really want to buy your game anyways.
Because then they'll go downvote it. Yeah. So it might actually boost your ratings, you know, because
they can't rate it when they only have the demo. They have to buy it.
I hope.
Yeah.
I assume that's true.
Maybe they can. If someone buys this, just the soundtrack for Levelhead, can they leave Levelhead a review?
I don't think so.
I think probably this is DLC because DLCs have their own pages.
And I think
they can leave a review on the DLC page.
Yeah, it's all very confusing. And apparently, I don't think Steam tracks conversions of demos on the back end.
No.
So there's like also questions about
what is this doing?
Even if you do talk to somebody who has a demo and you're like, is it work? And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
People are downloading it.
We just don't have the tools to see.
We don't. You know? There's just not enough. There's no way. There's no possible way.
It's one of those things that, like, our assumption has kind of always been that because almost nobody does demos, that
prevailing wisdom,
they must not
probably
work.
Something, yeah.
But historically, that has not been true.
Correct.
For how the universe.
It worked for America Online.
That's true.
So if it's good enough for AOL, it's good enough for me.
We'll start burning some CDs. Just mass mailing
just
them.
Throw them and just fling them like frisbees across the
universe.
Everybody'll
get them and then they'll be like, I have no means by which to play this.
Yeah,
right.
Because what the fuck is this weird giant disc?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows.
We built
our office computers and we didn't even put CD drives in them.
No, I haven't touched a CD.
It was weird because all of the components in there are now like very, like hard drives are now, you know, it's a little SSD. It's like a deck of cards, but thinner.
The only thing that's still huge is a graphics card because it's all fans.
Power supply.
And the power supply.
Power supply is big, graphics card is big. And the power supply is pretty much just there for the graphics card.
Yeah. So. Yeah. The CPUs have been the same size forever, and it also just needs a giant fan on top of it.
Yeah, but it felt good to build a computer with that much sort of open space.
Yeah.
So then we had to fill it with a giant CPU fan because, you know, you got to have something big in there.
I forgot about your ridiculous fan.
Because you have to manually glue it on to the CPU.
With your little thermal paste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was tense. I was sweating.
You're like, what if I fuck it up?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably fine. Yeah.
So
we'll have more news about this demo journey as time goes on. Let's talk about Levelhead and what's coming in this patch.
Yeah.
So, of course, we don't actually know yet because we still have a week more of work.
Yeah.
What we can't say is what we do have, which is we have a new tile set called Spookstone.
It's very spooky.
It's fantastic.
So, Sam, you want to talk about your process of making Spookstone and what is it?
I assume first you watch horror movies.
I got real freaked out.
Real scared.
Yeah. Real scared. Black Mirror, you know, just went down that rabbit hole for a while. And then I, you know, really wanted to channel those feelings into a tile set.
So I assume you drew a pentagram in blood.
Yeah, that's how you channel.
You went to a killmonger, got some blood, came back.
Yeah, yeah. You have to channel
the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put in some candles.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sat there in the dark.
I did.
And then you used Inkscape for a while.
Yep.
And then the SVG sort of was delivered unto me.
By the devil
himself.
was the name of the demon in the Ballyhoo?
Balthrazophor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's demony. Sounds like a demon
very
name.
Demon-y, so he was like, hey, I got this tile set for you if you want to.
He's very friendly.
Yeah, he's actually real. Yeah. strangely friendly.
That's how they get you. Yeah, that's the whole thing about demons.
You never reach inside the pentagram. That's how they get you. Yeah, you know. So I had him throw it out. I was like, throw me the SVG file. He burned it on a disc, and you know.
And then you're still like, I don't know.
I can't. Can you connect to the Wi-Fi, please? I can't do anything.
And he's like, oh yeah, do you have Dropbox? And there was a whole thing where
it took forever.
Wi-Fi password.
And then we had to try to Venmo him, and then he didn't have Venmo, and then we.
And then turns out we didn't either.
We didn't either, and then he didn't have PayPal, but we had PayPal.
Paying demons these days.
It used to be you just kill a goat.
Mm-hmm. You just kill a goat. Simple. Yep. You handed over a 20. It's fine. It's everything is. Yeah, no, and they give you the CD and you're good to go.
Yeah, yep. But yeah, so the Spookstone is the basic idea is 2 weeks ago we introduced the Rickety Wood tile set. And basically what that does is it allows players to build what feel like, you know, meaningful structures inside a level head. Because previously it's all been organic stuff and then the concrete, which is more of like a steely sort of structure. And so the intent here is to continue pushing into that realm with the tile sets, where the tile sets themselves, basically, they've got an opinion about what they're supposed to be used for, right? So rickety wood is the first example of that, where it's got a roof, which naturally means that you're going to build some housing structures out of it.
It turns into a bridge. You're going to build a bridge. Exactly. That's a bridge, buddy.
The cool thing about this is because of the context of where tiles, basically building something that looks the way you want – It ends up being a weird conversation with the tile set itself, because you can't just like choose what pieces from the tile set go where. They have a rule set that comes with them. And so the Spookstone, the really fun thing about it is it's got, you know, it's sort of like your castle-y sort of vibe, but it's got these skulls and stuff that kind of pop out here and there. And then also when you pull a big pillar up, instead of just being, you know, a pillar of rocks, it's basically like a screaming gargoyle the screaming mouth just gets taller as you drag the pillar up.
How taller does it get?
It'll just keep going.
As tall as your level is.
You could make one that is at the height of a skyscraper level if you want.
That's just a screaming mouth.
Mm-hmm. So, we got it all in.
It's so cool. It's such a cool tile set. It's really fun to build with too. It's really trying to figure out how to make. Because also it's the case that if you place a single tile out in the world just floating, it's just like a block, right? And as soon as you put another tile above or below it, it now becomes a screaming gargoyle.
Yep.
So you end up with these like floating screaming gargoyle statues. Just kind
of you can put all sorts of spooky stuff with it. So, and it's one of the more, I mean, this one and the Rickety Wood both are actually more advanced tile sets than any of the previous ones in terms of how many sort of things they're taking into account when they decide what they're going to become. So we may be revisiting the tundra and the desert in particular sometime later on to add a few more kind of bits and bobs to it, because it's just been fun to see what we can build with it. That said, the tile sets are like just the heaviest damn thing.
It takes a lot of iterations.
It takes so much time. Like I could build so many objects in the short period of time that it takes to like do a first iteration on the stone. So the stone itself took, I think it was 6 iterations for this one. The wood took 4. And it's because you're building just like one piece of what is in context a huge thing. And so it's really, you just takes a long time.
You
gotta
build it and then put it in the game and look and see like, is the pattern obvious? Yes. Is it? There's that idea.
Does it work in all the biomes?
Yeah. Yes. Does it work as color palettes? There's so many factors, and the feedback loop is long.
Yeah. So they're a bit heavy, but they're also one of those things that I think it adds so much in terms of like just what people can do and the vibe. That's the whole idea. It's like just give people different vibes to kind of throw down their level in different places.
Yeah. It creates cooler feelings. It creates more screenshotable moments. Yeah.
So people will be able to build dungeons and castles and stuff now, which I'm very excited about.
Spooky
so,
dungeons.
Very spooky things.
Yeah. And so then the other tile sets we have coming is we're working on the asteroid tunnels biome, which we'll just leave it at that. But it is from Flop Rocket. That's the asteroid tunnels.
It's the inspiration. Yeah.
Yeah. So very excited about that one. And then as far as new mechanical stuff already, so we've got our undo feature. We don't have redo yet, but
it's probably
coming.
Yeah.
Once we had the undo and then Sam finished the Spookstone, then I started playing around with the Spookstone in the game and – I kept having these scenarios where I would have like a chunk of terrain or something and I'd be like, I'd really like just this chunk to be Spookstone. Mm-hmm. And so then, of course, I had to like go select Spookstone and then like redraw the terrain by hand. And I was like, man.
Good time for that.
Yeah, I would really like it if I could just click a thing and just convert this into Spookstone. So I had a quick chat with Sam. I'm like, I want to make a paint bucket. And he's like, all right. So mm-hmm. that was a little chat. and so then I prototyped paint bucket in an afternoon, and then we now have this ability to – you just choose an item you want, click the paint bucket, and then just start clicking out in the world, and it just converts either like open space or it'll convert contiguous areas.
Yeah. And it won't fill the whole level. So that's
it not stops now at 144 tiles.
Which is still a lot.
It's quite a bit.
And this is why you need undo.
It's why you need undo. you might click the wrong thing.
Yeah, undo is like the gateway that opens up other tools because otherwise you can't.
Yeah,
it'll open up
multi-select and all this other stuff. So the paint bucket actually turned out to be far more potent than we realized because now you can even do things like, you know, you put down a gem, like maybe you put down a huge cluster of gems, right? And then you're like, oh, damn, I really wish that
I had a switch ID.
I really wish I hooked all these up to a switch.
Which I do all the time.
Yeah. So your previous method would be to like change one of them and then delete another one and then like place, eyedrop it and then sort of like drag by hand and replace mm-hmm. all of them. Now you can just eyedropper one, paint bucket, click.
Provided they're contiguous.
Right. Yeah. And then it just replaces all of mm-hmm. them. So you can actually like use it to paste properties of things or you'd be like, actually, I wish these gems were just spikes. And you just paint bucket, click. Now they're all spikes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's tons of super fast stuff. It also works with backgrounds. So you can convert like, I want this room to be made of glass. Yep. And then you just do that. And now it is. So paint bucket is fantastic. We've got now like automatic switches. We were chatting the Discord with
automatic switch.
Specchio. Specchio was like, man, I really wish this worked like Excel because he's building all kinds of crazy contraptions where typically he'll have a bunch of.
Well, if you saw some of the screenshots from his levels, you would know why. He wants it to work like Excel.
It's like 500 switches.
Basically building Excel.
Yeah, people who are building really elaborate switch logic will tend to cluster their logic systems together physically in the level so that they know what's happening. Yeah, so they make invisible relays and stuff. And so they'll place relays and then they'll manually click each one and then increment IDs, manually click the next one, increment IDs. And so he's like, man, it'd be nice if I could just place a thing and drag and it would just auto increment. You know, like 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, just like you see in Excel, right? Mm-hmm. And so we kind of talked about how this might happen and got it up and running. So now you can do that.
Yep.
And then we have like automatic switch assignments. Like you put a door down, switch 30 or something. Next switch you put down, it's 30. It's already hooked up. Super easy. Good to go. Mm-hmm. Yes, we got all of these fantastic quality of life features
for paths.
Copy paste for path properties. You set up a path and you're like, this path is going so fast. It looks like this, blah, blah, blah. You set up your next path, just paste it.
Yep.
Now it all has the same properties. Yeah. So this is probably going to shave hundreds of hours out of some of these levels that people are working on because some of these levels people are building are really, really complex.
Yeah. Which is good. I mean, the reality is we want the editor to be as close to the
Photoshop.
Speed of thought is actually what it is.
Yeah.
As you can get because essentially the more someone has to fight with the tool, the less they're going to build. That's just kind of, you know, how it is. I think if the tool is just so easy to use and continuously gets sort of more and more slick, then it lets you just have ideas as opposed to having to figure out how to execute those ideas, which is a big part of it. So, yeah, we are getting kind of confused because we're like, when do we stop as far as how far we push some of these things?
Right, because we could keep going.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to do the multi-select at some point in the near or distant future, I don't know.
Who knows? Later.
And once you can multi-select, that means like we can hook that up to the other tools. So like you multi-select and then paint bucket, and then paint bucket will just only apply to that area, right? Mm-hmm. So you can sort of constrain it. Multi-select and copy-paste. Multi-select and move, you know, drag things around in big chunks and stuff like that. Like there's a lot of things that we can do. Yep. And like we've also there's a lot of tools that you see out there that have symmetry concepts. Like you can place a symmetry line and then like – start drawing, you know, on one side of it, and then it copies across. Those are super cool and interesting. Should we do that? Should we do it?
I don't know.
Now that I've said that, it's out now. It's in the world now.
We'll see how many people scream about it.
We
got to
do it. So we're really excited about this. It's basically just like a big building update, just like making your building life super easy. So that's coming. And then otherwise in the news, there was an interesting happening on Steam.
Yes, the Steam summer sale has begun. And with it, of course, everyone's wallets cried out in unison as they started spending tons of money.
You know who else cried out in unison?
Basically every single dev who is not Cyberpunk 2077 related. And the reason is, and you might see articles about this, the thing is like we're recording this on Thursday, so it's only been happening now for 2 days. So we don't know.
Yeah.
Some things might have happened in the interim before this goes live.
When did the sale start? Was it yesterday?
2 days ago.
2 days ago?
Yeah. But the basically what happened was Steam tends to produce a sort of a metagame that goes on top of the summer sale. And the metagame is a way to encourage customers to basically spend more money on games and also kind of have some other fun reason, you know, to enjoy
participate.
Some kind of giveaways or
whatever. Yeah, it's like giveaways. It'll be like, oh, if you – sometimes they have random team assignment stuff where if you you know, if you spend money, then your team sort of does better over the course of the day. And then if you win that day, then you get some whatever, you know, tokens, whatever. Fuck. So
– it's gamifying buying games.
Yeah, which basically. Is, I mean, cool.
Cool. Works for
and,
me.
And the one this year is called the Grand Prix, and they definitely have an externality that they did not consider, which was – essentially, that they the way that they worded the metagame this time was basically that if you participate,
but it wouldn't even matter how they worded it; the outcome was still going to be the same,
right? But basically, what they said was that you, as a user, when you buy games during the Grand Prix, you essentially get more or less. I guess I'll just simplify it. It's like you got entered into a raffle, yeah. Right? And if you get selected at the end of the Grand Prix day, every single day, then you will win a game from your wish list. Now. The problem is
just a game, just a game.
Well, so it's supposed to be the language was supposed to essentially says like the one of the top three games in your wish list or the top game on your wish list. Like those are supposed to be the things. Yeah. But you can already see as a designer what's going to happen here, which is that if someone thinks that they might win, that means what they're going to do is go to their wish list. And again, people tend to not really read things. So the general read from this from consumers is, oh, as soon as I participate, I should purge my entire wish list except for the one game that I want and that is also the most expensive. Which is probably Cyberpunk 2077.
So some AAA game.
Yeah, really, really expensive AAA games, whatever else. And then if I win, then I'll guarantee to get that one, right? Because there's no choice happening. It just has to pick the one that's in there.
But even if people weren't reading it as like it could be anything, it still was one of your top three.
Yes.
Which meant to have it – to still have the one thing that you want, you still have to purge the entire list because you can't just like –
have
there's
three
no
times.
Three things that you want, right? Yeah. So that means that the only possible outcome is
you can
this whole
rearrange
thing.
Your list.
Yeah, yeah. But then you can rearrange it so that – one of three.
Right.
But if you want Cyberpunk 77, and you have to purge your whole list. Yeah. That's the only way to do it.
So you know, we saw this when it came up and didn't even think twice about it. But then we saw our wish list numbers on the following day for that first day of the summer sale.
Huge spike in deletions.
Yes, a gigantic spike in deletions. And the important thing to know if you're a dev on Steam is that you'll tend to see whenever there's a sale that you do, even if it's your own sale, you will see an increase in deletes. And it's because people are essentially – that's the only mechanism by which you now have to actually alert people that your game exists, right?
Yeah. So now they go look at it again, and then some of them decide, never mind, right. I don't actually want this ever.
So you're going to have a spike of activations as well as deletions. But very rarely, in fact, I don't think ever in our history for Levelhead or for Crashlands has the rate of deletions jumped above the rate of additions.
I don't think so.
They've gotten close at times, but never above. And for this summer sale event, the deletion rate was like 4x above the additions.
So it's a net loss.
Net loss of literally hundreds of wish lists. In Crashland's case, 500 wish lists in one day. Boom, gone. And so, you know, we saw this and we're like, that's fucking weird. And we checked in with some other devs to see, like, you know, maybe it's just our problem. I don't know. Maybe everyone hates Levelhead now. Who knows?
It's all of a sudden, you're like, never mind.
But it was so anomalous and weird. And so we checked in with a couple other people. And it's happening store-wide for tons of
every
devs.
Game is losing hundreds or thousands of wish lists.
It's just proportional. So.
So there's a Twitter thread now going where people are sort of dumping their graphs of their wish lists. And for the most part, it's that you see that same sort of thing happening where there's this huge spike in wish list deletion activity. And so it's really shitty.
Yeah. And relative to our total number of wish lists, it's not like –
it's not earth-shattering.
It's not like killing us or anything.
No, it's not earth-shattering.
But it is. It could last for two entire weeks.
Yeah, the Steam Summer Sale is 2 weeks.
It could end up being really bad.
Yeah, if we're losing hundreds of wish lists a day for 2 weeks,
that's really bad.
That's very bad.
And on top of that, so when we look at, you know, we've been doing a lot of our marketing efforts and outreach stuff. You know, when we look at something like getting that Rock Paper Shotgun article from last week, we can see the total number of wish lists that probably came in for that. You know, and what we see is that the total number of deletes that we had yesterday eclipsed the number of ads that we had, which means that we're essentially undoing a lot of our marketing efforts, which is infuriating in so many ways, and especially because of how the store algorithms have been shifting around for the last, you know, 6 months or so.
It was already basically impossible for us to like be successful on Steam.
Well, by virtue of Steam.
Yeah. Right.
So we have to bring outside people.
So we're doing that, and then Steam's like, we'll just take these away too.
Yeah. But since it's hitting everybody, it may
then maybe it's fine.
Maybe a net neutral.
I don't know. Yeah. So, you know, we'll be monitoring the situation for the rest of this week. Of course, by the time this podcast goes live, who knows? You probably will have heard about it from some other news source, because I think it's already been reported a little bit around the PC gaming space.
Yeah. Well, and it's important to recognize that, like, I think people are starting to report this as being, like, as hitting indies. I think this is just hitting everybody.
In principle, it should hit everybody.
Yeah. Because it's going to hit if you think that there's only one game. Like, if you think in order to sort of participate in this raffle or whatever, you just need to purge everything except for one game, then, you know, for you, it might not be Cyberpunk, right?
But like, for most people, there's going to be an expensiveness question attached to that.
Yeah. So you're going to, like, pick your $60 game, like, whatever's your most expensive game on your wish list.
And, I mean, it's hilarious, too, because this is for this whole, like, 2-week period or whatever, because they're doing a daily raffle, right?
Yeah.
And so it's in your best interest as a player to only have one thing in your wish list for the entire Steam sale.
Yes.
But the whole Steam sale is driven off of things that you've wishlisted that you are waiting to be on sale.
Yep. Yes.
Which in principle should hurt the sale enormously.
And we know things like Steam visibility rounds shows the game to people who have it wishlisted, right? Yeah. So, like, there's so many metrics of the Steam algorithm and managing your visibility.
And the way that it relates your game to other games is also driven by wishlists, because, like, that's essentially the proxy for demand, wishlists and sales, right? So if suddenly your game just gets nuked, like, I can't imagine that this is going to be good for us in any sort of way.
It won't be good for us, definitely. The question is just how bad will it be?
Worse for us than other people? Will it be the samely bad for everybody?
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty whack. So, we did send a note to the Steam team yesterday and just let them know this was happening.
In case they somehow weren't aware.
Yeah. I don't know if anything's going to happen because of it, but we'll see.
My bet, though, is that across the entire Steam store, hundreds of thousands or millions of wish lists suddenly vanished.
Yeah, I think it was like the Thanos.
The Steam wish list just got Thanos.
Yeah.
So that's happening. We'll have more information later about
real
that.
Great. Welcome to the business of gaming.
But this also does, before we go into questions, I want to say this does speak to the importance of having your game exist in multiple places.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So right now, of course,
unless somebody is just giving you, because if Steam was like, hey, we'll pay you for an exclusive and just gave us a bunch of money and then nuked our wish list,
it's like, fine.
This is fine. Yeah. We'll live through this.
It sucks because not as many people will play the game, but we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Not the case at the moment, but, you know.
So just keep that in mind for all of you who are upset about exclusives in places. It's just like, there are reasons for it. Yeah. It's because it's so hard to find success, and the success can be taken away
any moment. The fewer platforms you're on, the more likely any random whim or algorithm change or whatever might just tank something. Mm-hmm. So, but that's fine. We're in early access, and that's why we're only on one platform.
Yeah. We're learning things, really.
We're learning things, and we're cruising. And then did we want to talk about Steam login before we get to questions?
I think it's just kind of an interesting thing to talk about because we've talked in the past about, like, why did we do Bscotch ID? Why are we doing Rumpus? And our original motivation for that was because we wanted to gain some independence from the platforms, which is related to what we were just talking about, by basically having our own user list that we could email and say, hey, we've launched a new game or whatever. And that was the original goal. And everything that we've done since then has kind of been in the service of that and kind of been focused around that. Even with Levelhead, where Levelhead, unlike Crashlands, which kind of like dips its toe into web stuff, which is mostly just to give some syncing and some useful stuff like that. Levelhead's all about it, just all about that. And so there was this kind of conflict that we weren't really paying much attention to that kind of arose because of this, where since our initial desire was basically to give you a reason to give us your email address. Mm-hmm. And in return, we would provide, you know, some cool features. But then we made a game that's really dependent on those features. So now if you don't want to give us your email address or
can't,
more importantly, can't.
Which is the more likely.
Is more likely, yeah. Then now all of a sudden you just don't get to play those aspects of the game. And this has become a particular problem with our Chinese audience because the Great Firewall of China, as it is nicknamed, throttles the fuck out of our emails.
Mm-hmm. Or in some cases just blocks them.
Well, yeah, but throttles as in there's a really, really strict rate limit, like so strict that I'm not even sure how single users can get past it. Mm-hmm. Here we are trying to, you know, manage an email list. And so the moment you hit that limit, they just bounce all emails until the rate limit expires, but they also don't tell you what the rate limit is. Like, so all that's hidden stuff, right? And so because of that, we actually had to not allow email addresses from Chinese companies for our users, so like QQ.com in particular.
Because we can't send them emails.
Because we can't send them emails. And so that means we couldn't, like if somebody tried to register and we needed to send them a confirmation email, we couldn't guarantee it would go through and so on. And so we ended up with this weird situation where now we just weren't letting our Chinese audience specifically, but also just anybody who didn't have an email address or would have trouble getting an email from us, we just weren't letting them have web content.
Mm-hmm. Which in Levelhead, of course, is
the game.
The rest
Which,
of the
yeah,
game.
Exactly. Yeah. And so then we had this kind of this moment this past week when we realized like this is the wrong we're taking the wrong approach here, because we basically put our initial goal of sort of accumulating marketing power above the new need of actually delivering good web content, because we kind of just didn't notice the fact that in Levelhead specifically, the game itself like just needs that. It sort of it just eclipsed our original purpose. Well,
I think we knew it, of course, but we didn't realize how problematic it was for certain people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we had a bunch of complaints from our Chinese users who were just like, this is really frustrating that like, you know, I've tried three different email addresses and none of them let me do it. And of course, they don't have access to Gmail or Microsoft email services and so on, because those are all blocked or just not available in China. And so all the ones that would work, they don't have access to. And so we kind of rethought this and realized that this is dumb, and we need to put the user experience above marketing. But also, you know, and it wasn't just marketing too, because we wanted to make sure that if we needed to manage somebody's account, like if we needed to delete their account for inactivity, or if there was something suspicious going on or whatever, that we could email people to let them know, like, hey, you need to pay attention to this. But it turns out nobody opens their fucking emails anyway.
Yeah, it's fine.
So it's
fine. So it's just fine.
We'd rather they play the game.
Exactly.
So
which is all to say, you know, we've rethought about this and we're gonna now. So what I'm working on right now is actually allowing you just to log in using Steam. So you'll be able to log into the website using Steam, which doesn't give us an email address, and you'll be able to log in game using Steam without leaving the game at all. Because right now, for those of you playing Levelhead, you know that to log in, you either plug in your email address and go confirm on your phone, or you click out to go to Google and log in that way. There's no way just to like stay in the game and log in. And so we're going to be adding just a pure Steam login to make that happen. And the nice thing about this too is it allows us to go on other platforms with the same approach, like on Nintendo and so on, where we can keep people inside the ecosystem but still get them into Rumpus and then still provide cross-platform play.
Yeah, because if you wanted to do cross-platform stuff, you'd have to connect your accounts through the website.
Yeah, so it makes that a little more complicated, because now if you're just using your email, then you can just use your email everywhere and it's fine, right?
But you can't use your Steam account.
You can't use your Steam account on Nintendo and you know whatever. So it complicates. Right. So it adds a little bit of a complication layer in there, but that's something that people can deal with afterwards, you know. So they can still get in, they can still play the game, and then later on when they want full cross platform, they can go to the website, hook their accounts together, and have that all work.
Yeah.
So I think it's gonna be really good.
It'll be a trip.
So we're in the what I would believe you'd call it the inslickening phase of the game where the editor is becoming inslickened. Mm-hmm. The login
inslickened.
Inslickened. Everything can be so slick.
Yep.
You're going to open up the game. You're going to slide right off, crash into a ditch.
Yep.
Yep. It'd be crazy.
So
I think that's the metaphor.
That's how that goes. Yeah. All right. So that's coming. Any other thoughts?
Nope.
All right. Let's get on to some questions. These questions come from listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. First question comes from Jer McBain. Hey guys, longtime Potter, first time questioner. I'm curious how you all feel about working in games for the rest of your careers. Are there fields you'd consider returning or shifting to? I sometimes struggle with the idea of only tangentially contributing to the betterment of the world through creating games and telling stories rather than through direct action like politics, science, etc., which is where the motivation for my question originates. Big love, less than three. That's the heart.
I think I'll answer that.
So you
back half of that first.
Yeah, you can from science into games.
Which is just to say that if you believe that you can cause direct change via politics, science, medicine, etc., you're wrong.
There it is.
So we'll just leave it at that.
you don't unpack it
all? No, we'll unpack it. Which is all to say that causing change is not a thing that a person gets to do. That's a thing that people do collectively, right? If you turn out to be a really good politician and like really, really can gather people together and like really make stuff happen, then okay, perhaps, right? Except like look around and like how many of the good politicians have you seen who've pulled that shit off? Like almost none.
Who make it to the top and then. Yeah.
So realistically, while it is of course a very noble thing to go off and attempt to directly cause change. The fact is that you can't.
Well, people directly. Both.
You mean individually.
Individually.
Right. So people both want and hate change.
Yeah.
So making it happen is really, really hard.
Yeah. So really what you would do is basically you would yoke yourself up to a larger scale operation or vision that then you are a part of impacting that change.
Yep.
Right? So that's the way to do it.
Well, which of course, but then now how is that different from making games for people to make them have just a happier life?
Sam, I think this is something that you talked about when we first got started in the studio as well, of the question of where should my skills be going?
Yes.
And is it, if I do have skills, there's actually like a bigger moral question. Like if I have the skills to quote, help people in a certain way that maybe like puts food on their table or whatever, is it ethical for me and is it morally fine for me to just not and instead just go do this completely other thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there was one that I kind of juggled with a little bit, mainly because I had a dean in school who, when I said, hey, I think we're going to go build video games, she was like, you're going to use your talents for that? And I was like, I have no talents.
You're like, who you think jokes I am? On you.
Yeah. But no, I think it is an interesting moral question, but I think that's assuming a lot of weird things.
Exactly, because it makes the assumption that if you were to take a different path, that you would actually create more value.
Not only that, but it assumes that the value of something like a game experience is lesser than some value associated with something else. So whether that's food or whatever else. And certainly, of course, like when you look at Maslow's hierarchy, like, yeah, you need to be full of food in order to do most things. You need to get a good night's rest. You need to be secure, whatever else.
But if you care about the hierarchy, then really the only ethical thing for you to be doing is getting rid of homelessness and starvation.
Well,
which is not really what most people are focusing on. Like, certainly some people are. That's great. But when people are talking about these big questions like, what should I do to better humanity? They're actually rarely thinking about the part that truly needs it. They're usually up higher in the tree.
A little bit higher, yeah.
And once you're up higher in the tree, then like there isn't that much of a difference between any.
Well, not only that, but like there's doctors. Like if I didn't become a doctor, there's still going to be doctors around.
It doesn't actually change anything.
Yeah. So who cares?
I think, I mean, being a part
of – whether I'm a doctor or not, that's not going to –
I mean, honestly, like being part of, you know, very civil movements is in and of itself a really good – like you don't have to – I guess that's the thing about you. Not everybody has to be dedicating their full life to some healthcare-related thing, ending homelessness, whatever else, to be able to, as Adam was saying, actually be part of making a larger change. So if you go and like you do a march on Washington for like gun violence or whatever, if you want to be a part of some change, like you can still do that in a whole variety of ways without necessarily having to be your day-to-day thing.
Yeah. But it's that whole – to me, it's that whole the premise of the question of there being like direct versus indirect action.
Yeah.
Right? Where indirect, I guess, could mean like you just accidentally cause things, right? And if that's the side that you want to not be on, then you know that's fine. But there is no side where there's just like you just cause a thing to be better and like that's the end of the story, right? You just get to move into that space where you're only ever indirectly causing sort of general change.
Yeah, but I mean it's even the case when you're making games, right? Like as soon as you're on a team, it's not just you who's making the product.
It's not about you.
And you're making better the lives of the people on your team.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of really interesting weird angles to this, but I think there's generally a hierarchy associated with – I think it's very natural in our culture to assign this hierarchy to things like art. Art tends to go below things like health or medicine. But if you look at something like social work, that's a really interesting one because like people put social work actually somewhere between those in terms of like a status hierarchy, you know, where in terms of what the value of your work is or like how society thinks of you. Mm-hmm. And so you have these like science and researchers at the top, you know, in terms of like noble pursuits. And then
I would actually put farming at the very top.
Oh, yeah, but no one would think about it.
Because that shit is fucking hard and it never gets easier.
Yeah.
It's just always hard your whole life. Then you got no cartilage left in your joints and it hurts a lot and it's even harder.
Yeah.
And then you just keep going.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there's some imperative to give back, certainly, and to, you know, to do things for other people, but it doesn't necessarily have to be, the life's work. And in fact, that may not be the best way for you to amplify your
– I think it's – what you should do is whatever you are good at and excited about because that is probably how you're going to actually make the biggest positive impact to the most people. And it doesn't necessarily mean curing their disease or whatever else it is that's happening, but you will be improving their lives in a whole bunch of other ways. Mm-hmm. And that's also important.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's just all important. It reminds me of that whole thing when people like start competing about who has things worse, you know?
Yeah.
And instead of just being like, just kind of things are bad.
Sometimes
and like
bad.
Things are bad for you in these ways, things are bad for you in these ways. Like, we don't need to fight about how bad it is because it's all bad. You just recognize it's bad.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, my foot kind of hurts, and it has for a month.
And I'm like, yeah, well, my knee hurts.
Yeah, I'm like, your knee hurts? Some people don't even have a foot or a knee. That also sucks. Mm-hmm. Sucks. Yep. Everything still sucks.
We've all got some foot. Okay. No.
And it's all fine, and it's all valid, and we could all use a little help. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can't do everything.
Well, I think there's an interesting point there, too, which is, like, there's some really weird – There's some interesting stuff that comes from a long range view of these things, which is, say you do something like make games, or you're like a Bill Gates sort of figure. You make some technological thing.
He was in his garage tinkering around with computers like some kind of weirdo. Yeah.
So say you make something like that. You're not dedicating your life in that moment to sort of the betterment of humanity, but the product you make, or just the capital gains you get from the work that you've done there, then allow you to do something like cause, you know, way more high leverage change by virtue of, you know,
I'm saying
wiping out malaria or something.
Go toward your calling, whatever you're the best at, mm-hmm. whatever you're super pumped about, that's where your energies go because you can leverage it.
Yeah. And I think the main thing to focus on is not actively making the world worse.
At least don't do that.
Just don't do that.
At least be a neutral presence.
Yeah.
You know, use your turning signals at the very least.
Yep. Like, yes, please.
That's phase one mm-hmm. of not being a terrible, evil person. all right, next question comes from Two Scoop Games, who asks appropriately. Some friends and I are planning to visit for Pixel Pop Fest this September, and since we will be on your home turf, I must ask, what is your favorite ice cream?
Clementines.
Wait, let me finish the question. What is your favorite ice cream in St. Louis?
Clementine.
I'll make sure people can hear the question. Yeah,
it's 100% Clementines.
Clementines.
And speaking of Pixel Pop, because people listening might not know what that is. Mm-hmm. So that is a St. Louis event that was – I can't remember how it even started. Was it co-op related originally?
I think it was Carol and the Badgers maybe read it. I think
the Badgers maybe. Yeah. I think Carol still runs it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a event that's actually grown significantly since it first started. It's really well sponsored, at least has been the past couple of years. And it's just a nice little like sort of general celebration of games and the things that go into it, both for creators of games and players of games. So it's a little bit
it's an interesting multi-purpose hybrid event.
Yeah, and it looks at music and it looks at topics of inclusion and diversity, and it's a really interesting kind of all around event. And of course, it's in St. Louis, so it's cheap. It's mm-hmm. like $15 or whatever for a ticket.
Yep.
So we'll be showing up there, presumably, to some extent. We probably won't be there for the whole thing, but we'll be there off and on. So if you want to go to a cool event in St. Louis,
mm-hmm, that's one.
That's the one to go to.
Aside from a Shenanicon.
Shenanicon's the other one.
That's mm-hmm. the other one. So go to both of those.
Yep.
And when you're here, Clementines.
Yep.
Get your ice cream.
Get Clementines.
I would not recommend their vegan ice cream, though.
They have booze ice cream where they actually have like – it actually has alcohol in it.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
That's pretty good, too.
Every time I eat one of those, I'm like, I don't want the flavor of booze in my ice cream.
I think ice cream is better just as ice cream.
What you want to do is you want to eat ice cream, take a shot.
Yeah.
Eat more ice cream, take another shot.
Yeah, those are one of those things
that
better
separate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The vegan chocolate one is pretty good because there's so much chocolate in it.
Well, that's the one I had. It was too much for me.
I
love chocolate, and that was – I had two or three licks, and I was like, that's it. I've had enough chocolate.
You got to the center of the Tootsie Pop.
Yeah. I will say I have had ice cream across this country. I've even had it across the world in China, and I'm going to have it when I go to Iceland. I'll let you know.
No, China is not well known for ice cream.
If Iceland does not have good ice cream.
Or land.
Yeah, they're going to have
or land cream.
Yeah. But Clementine's is honestly, I think, the best ice cream just ever.
It's really good.
It's really good. So, I mean, don't take my word for it.
I think it's fine.
But don't take my word for it.
But yeah, go there and see for yourself. All right, next question comes from Hookah Itty Guy.
Nice.
I participated in the Levelhead beta, but I found it too difficult for my aging brain and slow meat fingers to get very far in the campaign, let alone the player-created levels. I did buy the game because I wanted to support the awesome Butterscotch team, but wasn't expecting to play it. I fired it up last weekend on a whim and got much further and started to get a handle on some of the complex moves required. Have you ever bought a game you didn't expect to enjoy but ended up enjoying it anyway?
I think there's something to be said for the incubation time, which is some games, either because they have a skill wall which is something like level head, which is it is hard.
Yeah, we have it making the campaign easier.
I was going to say, we also really tuned up the campaign in the last 2 months, so it's probably just better generally in an easier sort of sense. So I'm glad that's working. But I think there's definitely an incubation time for some games. I mean, there's been some games I picked up where I'd play it for like 45 minutes or an hour, and I'm like, I feel like it's hard. I don't know. And then, randomly a month later, got some downtime, just boot it up, and then you get like right into it. And I've talked about, my experience with Terraria a few times where I tried it 3 or 4 times and couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. The hotkeys were weird. Everything was just odd. And then tried it with Adam and Jenny one last time, and it somehow kind of clicked.
Yeah.
And then I was there for like 70 hours. So I think
– some games, they're harder to get into. I had the experience with Eve Online. Actually, I played it for a couple days in like 2013 or something. And I was just like, what is this garbage? because all I really knew is that it was a space game where you fly a ship, right? But like, you don't fly a ship. You tell the ship what to do and then it does it. So it's you're like, orbit that asteroid.
Right, it's not piloting.
Yeah, and then your ship kind of like slowly gets its way over there and then slowly circles the asteroid.
Slurps its way around.
Yeah, and then it's like if you want to shoot something, you're not like aiming at it or anything like that.
You just tell it.
Yeah, you like hold control, click on it. It's like, dip, 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 yep. Target. And then you click on your guns. And now you just are shooting it. So there's like, at first glance, I was looking, I was like, this isn't good. This isn't fun at all. So I just turned it off and then carried on my way. And then every now and then I would just like read these articles about these immense battles going on in this game. And thousands of players coming together and all this politics and stuff. And I'm like, I mean, maybe it's interesting. So I fired it up again a year later and I joined a group. Like I joined a player corporation. And then all of a sudden all these people were giving me tips and like sharing strategies on how to build your ships out and all this stuff. And there's like a huge amount of depth that I couldn't see at the beginning because I was just looking in the wrong place. Like I was just
– yeah,
I was looking for action instead of strategy.
That might be part of it is games that have a really high amount of depth but that you wouldn't necessarily see at the outset, which I think actually Terraria falls into that category.
Yeah.
Because it looks – again, and a level
when you start Terraria, it's just like this very slow mining.
It is so slow.
It's so slow.
Unbelievably slow, in fact.
But it's visually stunning. So you can
stunning.
You can ride the wave.
Yeah. So I think that's one of those things. I think Levelhead has that same thing going on actually where it looks – everyone's like, oh, it's just a platformer.
Mm-hmm.
But as you can see from the people who have played it now for hundreds of hours since it's been out
– it just keeps opening up.
There's a lot of meat in that thing and you can't tell just from looking at it, which is the weird part about it. But that could be – I mean that's like a room for accessibility thing where you come into a game because you're like, oh, I like the idea of this, and then you realize that the well is just infinitely deep on it is really cool. But of course, getting to that point sometimes takes a little bit longer than
– yeah. And that's part of the question with a demo is like if we make a demo that doesn't give an inclination that there's a lot more going on because if the demo is an hour and a half long or something and you can play the game for thousands of hours – then you're not really scratching the surface, but you have to see enough to know that those thousands of hours could be there, right? So there's definitely a sort of a fine line to walk. It's like, how do you convey that? I don't know. It's hard. Next question comes from Astro Beef. In episode 86, this was a while ago.
I'll say.
In episode 86, you talked about the toxicity of advertising. How has advertising changed since 2017? What are your current thoughts on advertising and how do you advertise your own product without advertising grossly?
How has advertising changed? I don't think it has.
Advertising continues to get more costly.
Yeah.
Like by a lot. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing that has changed and it is – advertising is essentially – as in like for us to advertise our game, it's effectively out of reach. We basically can't do it. Advertising as a means to make money off of games is simultaneously becoming less – beneficial in the amount of payouts that you get.
You can't, which is weird.
Yeah, it costs you more to advertise and you get less if you are selling advertisements somehow. So
where's it going, Google? who's the middleman here?
Yeah, exactly. So ads, have always and continue to suck and they always continue to suck more, and that's still true.
They just will. They're not a thing because it's not a thing you ever want to see. I think it's just
– No. And people get better and better at ignoring them or creating tools that block them. And
I would say that – and because they are becoming less profitable yet still somehow more expensive, I would say browsing news sites and stuff on the web has gotten ludicrous these past couple of years, especially.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it's hard to tell for us because the office has a pie hole I hooked up and my home has a pie hole I hooked up.
Pie hole is a Raspberry Pi that eats ads.
Yeah. And it eats them at the router level.
They can't even get in.
They can't get in. They're not in the house at all,
which is awesome.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I've had scenarios. So, I mean, I do run an ad blocker, but I also disable it whenever a website is like, hey, buddy,
yeah,
we're trying to make a living here. And I'm like, sure, fine. I'll look. But whenever that pops up, what I also will see, because the ad blocker will have a counter of like how many ads it has blocked. It'll be like, we blocked 39 ads on this page
yeah.
Right? And they're like, could you turn off your ad blocker? I'm like, actually, no. I can't.
It's a lot.
Because what you'll see then is if you're reading an article, you'll have up to only like three sentences and then an ad and like three more sentences, then an ad, three more sentences, then an ad.
The weirdest part is if it's an article that also has pictures in those places, because sometimes I look at the ad and I'm like, what does this have to do?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, whoa, okay.
Well, especially because they're targeted too, right? Because they're like, because they're trying to make them more likely to be the thing you would care about. Yeah. So like they're getting better and better at making ads be like relevant to the article even. And so then you're like, is this part of the article or what?
Yeah. You're like, I want to read about the DNC debates from last night. What is this picture of butt cream? What?
What have you been Googling? Yeah, I think it's certainly weird. But I think this is a big struggle actually, which is, you know, all the companies that rely heavily on advertisement. You see most of them have switched over to some form of a mixed model with subscriptions and stuff like that now. Because it's just not working.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays with our struggles to get noticed, I am ambivalent about advertising from like both. Like I end up in a neutral stance on it because I hate seeing ads that sort of like wedge themselves in places where I just want to be left alone. So like during a game or whatever at the gas station.
Yes.
They play ads at you now on these little screens and stuff.
I will go to a different gas station whenever I see one of those.
So like there is a time and a place maybe for those kinds of things, but as a company, I think like I want to be able to tell people about the stuff that I'm making, and I want to be able to do it massively and cheaply. Like I want to be able to send out 100 million impressions of a product that I have created because I want 100 million people to see it. You know?
Yeah, well, I think that's
they
don't want to see it.
It's a really interesting thing to say though, because I think there are places where people are looking for those things. I think Steam's actually the best example of this, which is the front page of Steam is always games you don't have.
It's an advertisement.
It's actually just an
advertisement. It's a big old billboard.
Yeah. And the thing is,
but it is four things you might want while you're there trying to find things you might want.
Because categorically, it makes sense. And so it's actually really fun then. Like, I mean, that's how I actually engage with Steam primarily is I'll just go look through stuff.
Well, it's the same deal with Amazon when you search for like speakers and it's like sponsored speakers. And so it's stuff you were looking for anyway. And then,
those kinds of places for it. It's probably just that it leaks into all these other domains where you're trying to figure out.
Well, the problem is that the best places for us to advertise, the only ones we can control are things like advertise on Facebook or advertise on Twitter or Instagram or whatever. And in those contexts, people are not looking for that at all.
Yeah. And I think the core problem with the advertising model is that it creates these attention traps. So something like Facebook or Twitter, they as a platform only benefit or they only profit by how many advertisements they sell because they have only a free product, right? So they have to do anything possible to keep people on their system.
But the goal of ads, of course, is to take people off of their system.
Right.
So they have these perverse incentives.
Right. So what you'll end up seeing then is – and there's been so much in the news, especially in the past couple of years about this, is like what is Facebook's ultimate strategy then? It's to make sure that you stay on Facebook and see as many ads as possible. Yeah. And
but also make those ads seem valuable by interacting with them in some way.
Right. And so they have developed tons of technology of like being able to use a neural network to identify like, is this a picture of a baby? People love pictures of babies. Mm-hmm. They tend to stick around 10% more if we show them baby pictures. So now you just see baby pictures, right? So they actually – they algorithmically curate what content you see from other people in such a way as to make it either like something that causes outrage so that you comment on it.
Or something that is a baby or a
kid. Or something that is – that is like a puppy or a baby or a meme, right? And so you end up – and then Twitter ends up being similar in the sense that the things that spread the most are in-group memes.
But how does this impact advertising?
How does it impact advertising? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's that advertising is the incentive for them to essentially manipulate the content that you see in a certain that appeals to a certain emotional center, right? Mm-hmm. And so you'll end up sitting on these platforms forever, just so that you see tons and tons of ads, and the incentive is there for them to basically manipulate what happens, mm-hmm. right? So it's not good in terms of what it does to you to just only be exposed to like puppies, babies, and outrage. Like those are the three things.
Well, puppies and babies is fine, I think.
Not if that's only you see.
I don't know. If I only saw pictures of kittens, like if every time I opened the internet, if all I saw was kittens, I'd be such a happy person. Mm-hmm. Everything would be great.
Yeah.
Says some bit about kittens.
Kittens are the cutest.
Kittens are fine.
They're the cutest entities in the universe.
But they also have built in razors.
Yeah, but when you're looking at pictures of them, they're not going to get you.
You're a safe distance.
Yeah, they're just cute. Yeah.
You know, I think it basically becomes an interesting, it's a mixing of the profit incentive with some of this stuff where I think most people can remember who've been on Facebook or Twitter for a long time. Like, for some reason, everyone has like really rosy memories of the first couple of years of these platforms. And I think largely it was at a time when they weren't as algorithmically driven.
Yeah. Like if one of your friends posted something, you would see it. It would just be chronologically in your mm-hmm. newsfeed. Right.
And so there's something to be said for a lack of control in some of these, in terms of like how that content gets delivered, in terms of what the user experience is at the end of the day. But it certainly doesn't make you stick around, right? So you might have a better time with it, but also just leave because who cares? You know, you just like see what your friends are up to, and then you get the fuck off Facebook and do something else. And if that's not happening anymore, then now they have problems.
It's better for them to suppress things that your friends have said if they think you're not going to like it, or unless they think you're really going to hate it. Well, and this also happens with things like YouTube.
Yeah,
you know, where their algorithm of showing like your next recommended video. There's been also a lot of articles about this over the past couple
creepy
years.
It gets you.
Yeah, how essentially if all you do is follow recommended videos, what they want to do is continually recommend you videos that are similar but more quote engaging. And more engaging means that you're more likely to leave a comment, mm-hmm. interact with it in some way, or watch it to the end, right? And where that always ends up is Nazi propaganda.
Yep.
Like
or conspiracy theories.
Yeah. So you start anywhere on YouTube and just follow the recommended videos, and then eventually you're a Nazi now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not good either. It's good for selling ads, but it's not good for you know, anybody else.
Yeah. But it's not good for pairing your ads alongside content.
Yep.
Right.
And that's the trouble YouTube's been having lately.
Yeah. I guess people want to pull it. So I don't know. When it comes to ads, I think it's just an interesting problem, which is that it's basically impossible as a small entity to be able to put your product in front of people now. Mm-hmm. And over time, it's become increasingly impossible for all these kinds of reasons. Right?
Which is weird, though, because the whole point of – like that was the dream with Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram actually was that you now have control over your brand presence.
Yeah.
And it's true, but –
only if you are only wealthy.
As long as that doesn't interfere with the profit motive of the person who controls the platform.
Well, it's an interesting thing that we've seen as we saw, and we talked about this for games, it's true everywhere, is we had this like rise of the democratization of everything due to the internet. But because that also came alongside the entities that actually a small number of entities that created these platforms, who then needed to make as much money off of them as possible, which basically had to remove the democratic component, as in it's no longer the case that you get to just say things, people get to see them, and that's the relationship. So now actually that democratization is going away, right? Mm-hmm. And it's also true on games. Like it used to be that you had Steam Greenlight, right? And that was things got voted in and they could appear as a consequence. And because that was how it worked, then Steam would like there weren't that many games. So Steam would show it your game to everybody and then find out how good it was based on how people interacted with it. And now there's so much content that Steam can't do that anymore. And so now they have to suppress everything that comes in that's new.
Yep.
And the only way to make it be successful is for you to already have enough wealth and success to make it successful, right? So I think we're on the interesting other side of the hump.
It's self-correcting is what it is.
Yeah, self-correcting. Yeah. Where it used to be like you could just be a rando on the street, start up a YouTube channel, and become famous, right? And that's just not – that's not the universe that we live in anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of information out there too about new YouTubers and sort of like how hard it is to get their videos seen. There's these thresholds where like once you hit a couple hundred thousand subscribers, you know, then your videos will start to be seen by 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Just like who
have subscribed to you, which is the kind of the point we went back to a long time ago with Facebook. Like we spent all this time building up a page on Facebook that had, you know, 18,000 people in it. And then as we were making posts, we realized that our posts weren't reaching a fraction.
They were reaching a couple hundred people.
Yeah. And we were like, what the hell's going on?
And then Facebook would taunt us about it. They'd be like, hey, 200 people have seen this. You want to give us five buckaroonies?
Yeah.
Shout out to a whole 200 people saw it. You should be proud of this post. How about a little money to boost it?
What is happening?
That's wild. Yeah. But so, on the other side of advertising, though, mm-hmm. which is us just like, say, using the Ballyhoo or just talking to people or whatever right. and trying to get people to buy our game. This is another interesting thing because people are so fucking allergic to advertising that even in the context of a thing that they would want, right? So like, so say we go into IMGur and we're like, mm-hmm.
look at this cool game.
Look at this cool game we made. And we're just like, we're just people who made a game and want you to buy it, right? And people get outraged that you would dare, bring your advertisement on their platform. Mm-hmm. And we even struggle with this with copywriting, not like the legal thing, but the writing of copy, yes. where we're trying to, you know, write up a blog post or Sam's writing the Ballyhoo or writing our Steam store page, right? Mm-hmm. Because at their core, all of those things are actually advertisements that we're sending directly to people. And we do have a goal the whole time, which is to try to put words together in the right order that cause you to be like, oh, I do want to give this a try, mm-hmm. right? And
of course, we're not pushing something that we don't believe in.
No.
Like we're
presumably neither are most advertisers.
Yeah, we're about 95% confident that if you play Levelhead, you're going to like it, mm-hmm. just statistically.
Yeah.
Right? So we're not doing you a disservice by showing you our game.
But I get the problem on all directions, which is just that like in order for us to be successful as a company, people have to buy our stuff. In order for people to buy our stuff, we have to be able to tell them about it.
Know about it.
That's advertising in whatever form that it takes. But advertising just as a thing is just so dirty, you know?
Well, I think it's because you have to tell someone about what you're making before they are asking you for it.
Yeah.
That's what it requires.
Which means it's never welcome.
Right. And I think that's just kind of the fundamental nature of it.
Because it's what you're actually asking is for a change. Mm-hmm. Right? Like if somebody is already playing Fortnite, they're already spending their evenings watching Netflix, really what you're asking of somebody is to make a life shift, even in a small way. Like have less money and replace your current hobby with my hobby mm-hmm. thing that I made as mm-hmm. a hobby, right? And as we discussed earlier, people are pretty they have inertia.
Yeah, you
like to keep doing what you're doing, and change is hard and uncomfortable. So I don't know. I don't think there's a good
advertising. Just is what it is. I don't think there's no
it's,
like
it's a necessary evil, but it doesn't have to be as evil as it is.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Okay,
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. We can leave it there.
Yeah,
that seems good. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Koster, for putting the podcast together. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, just go to podcast.beescotch.net. We have links to everything. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye. Bye.